before the bodies learn to breathe and run.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine for a moment the very first transition from single-celled life to multicellular animals.
Right.
Because for billions of years, life on Earth was just, well, a solo act. A single cell did absolutely everything it needed to survive. It found food, moved around, defended itself, all entirely on its own.
Yeah, it was a totally closed system.
Exactly. But then this monumental shift happens. Cells start teaming up. They form the very first multicellular organisms. And suddenly, this brand new, massive biological community faces two really deeply existential challenges.
Right, because when you aren't just a single cell interacting directly with the ocean around you anymore, you have a massive logistics problem.
Oh, totally.
You have to figure out how to transport oxygen and nutrients internally, like to all those cells hidden deep inside this new bulky body.
Yeah.
And arguably even more pressing, you have a massive security problem.
No.
You have to defend this entire new community against invading pathogens. You need a dedicated mobile defense force.
Exactly. So how did the very first blood cells actually emerge to solve those specific problems? And why is our modern immune system, you know, the complex network of cells operating inside you right now, why is it organized the way it is?
It's a huge question.
It is. What really happens when we trace our blood cells back a billion years? That's the mystery we're exploring in our deep dive today.
And it's a phenomenal journey. I mean, we're gonna look back further than any physical fossil could ever take us, all the way back to the dawn of animal life.
Today, we celebrate the work of a global team of researchers from institutions including Kyoto University, the University of Tokyo, the Institute de Biologia Evolutiva, who have advanced our understanding of the evolutionary history of animal blood cells.
Yeah, this team essentially set out to solve a massive missing link in biology.
Right.
Because we've known for a long time that blood cells are a unique innovation of animals. They're shared across the board. You find them in humans, obviously, but you also find them all the way down the evolutionary tree in primitive organisms like sea anemones.
Okay, let's unpack this. We know we share basic blood cells with sea anemones.
Right.
But the mystery is the actual evolutionary trajectory, right? Like, how did we get from a primitive ancient cell floating in a primitive ocean to the incredibly complex array of T cells, B cells, and, you know, oxygen-carrying red blood cells circulating in your veins today?
Exactly.
To wrap my head around this, I like to think about it like a one-person startup company.
Oh, I like where this is going.
At the very beginning, you have one employee. That's your single-celled organism. And that one employee does literally everything. They do the accounting, they design the product, they answer the phones, and they sweep the floors.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
But imagine that as the company grows into a massive multinational corporation, which is our multicellular life, that original employee doesn't just hire new people from the outside.
Right? They can't.
Exactly. Instead, they essentially clone themselves, and then they give those clones highly specialized job titles.
Right. You can't have one person doing everything anymore. You need a dedicated IT department. You need logistics. You need corporate security. The question these researchers asked is, how exactly did the security and logistics departments of our bodies evolve from that original single employee?
And finding that answer required an incredibly innovative approach, because you can't just, you know, dig up a billion-year-old fossilized blood cell.
Yeah, they don't leave skeletons.
Right. Soft tissues, especially single microscopic cells, they just don't fossilize in rock.
Okay.
So the researchers had to look for a completely different kind of fossil record, a genetic one.
Right. If there are no physical fossils, you have to look at the code. But wait, if they're trying to track down ancient immune cells across all these different animals, why not just scan their DNA for the specific toxic enzymes those cells use as weapons? Like,
right.
Just look through the genes that build the actual swords and shields.
Yeah, that's a very common trap in evolutionary biology, and it's exactly what this team wanted to avoid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if you just look at the weapons, you might be fooled by something called convergent evolution.
Okay, break that down for me.
Convergent evolution is when two completely unrelated animals independently find the exact same solution to a problem just because they have similar lifestyles.
Oh, right.
Think of birds and bats.
They both have wings.
Right, they both have wings and they both fly. but they didn't inherit those wings from a recent common winged ancestor. They arrived at the wing solution entirely independently.
Ah, I see. So if researchers just looked for a specific toxic enzyme in, say, a sea urchin and a human, they might link two immune cells together that actually have totally different historical origins just because they both figured out how to make the same poison.
Precisely. It's a false positive.
Wow.
So to avoid that, the researchers used a method called cross-species whole transcriptomic comparison.
Okay, that is a mouthful.
It is, yeah. But basically, they didn't just look at the raw DNA code or the terminal weapons. They looked at gene expression, meaning which genes were actively being turned on and off across a staggering variety of species.
By how many?
We're talking humans, mice, zebrafish, sea urchins, tunicates, flies, nematodes, and even sponges.
That's an insanely wide net. But how does looking at gene expression solve that convergent evolution problem? What were they actually looking for in all that data?
What's fascinating here is how transcription factors solve this problem. Instead of looking at the genes that build the weapons, they focus heavily on transcription factors, or TFs.
Okay.
Transcription factors are the master regulators of a cell.
Can you break that down? Like, how is a transcription factor different from just a regular gene?
Sure. Think of a developing cell like a massive construction site.
Okay.
The functional genes, the ones that make the toxic enzymes or the structural proteins, they're the bricklayers, the cement mixers, and the cranes doing the actual physical work.
Right, they're on the ground.
Exactly. The transcription factors, on the other hand, are the site foremen. They hold the master blueprints. They don't lay any bricks themselves, but they shout the orders about who works, when they work, and what the overall building is going to look like.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they dictate the core identity of the cell.
Oh, that makes total sense. Because they control that deep regulatory core, they serve as a much more reliable marker of true ancestry.
Exactly.
Two unrelated cells might hire the same bricklayer, but they wouldn't use the exact same foreman with the exact same master blueprint unless they were actually related.
You nailed it. They are the true fossil record of a cell's lineage. So by analyzing a specific data set of 1,610 orthogroups,
which are what?
You can think of them as ancient shared dictionaries of genetic language across different species.
Got it.
So by focusing on those dictionaries and these highly variable transcription factors, they ruled out that convergent evolution trap.
Which finally allowed them to map out the very origin of our blood cells. And the starting line they found was surprising. The very first blood cells, the granddaddies of our entire immune system, were macrophage-like. Now, macrophages are phagocytes, right?
Yes, they are.
They're the cells that essentially crawl around and eat cellular debris and pathogens.
Yeah, they're the cleanup crew and the first responders. And the researchers found that this primordial eating machine program was governed by one specific transcription factor called FOS.
FOS, the original site foreman for our immune system.
Yes. And to actually prove this, the researchers went beyond just looking at the data. They performed a live experiment.
Oh, cool.
They looked at a single-celled relative of animals, a tiny organism called Capsaspora outsurzaki.
Okay.
And this organism isn't an animal. It's a close cousin to the common ancestor of all animals.
Okay, so they're looking at a modern organism that acts like our billion-year-old single-celled ancestor. What did they do to it?
They performed an enforced expression experiment. They essentially hacked the Capsaspora cells and forced them to artificially overexpress that specific FOS gene.
They cranked it up.
Right. They wanted to see what the foreman would do if you gave him a megaphone.
And what happened mechanically to the cell?
So normally, in their natural life cycle, these single-celled organisms often clump together into aggregates to survive.
Like a little colony.
Exactly. But when FOS was overexpressed, the mechanics of the cell completely changed. They stopped adhering to each other.
Really?
Yeah. They detached and stayed in this independent, wandering, amoeboid state. They started behaving exactly like primitive roaming blood cells in a multicellular body.
Wow. So they proved that the genetic toolkit for a wandering immune cell existed before animals even evolved?
Yes.
The multicellular animals just repurposed that ancient wandering behavior to patrol their new body.
Exactly. They took something that already existed and gave it a new job.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We have this ancient roaming eating machine driven by the FOS foreman, but life on Earth doesn't stay simple.
No, it definitely doesn't.
We eventually reached the dawn of bilateria. These are animals with bilateral symmetry, essentially animals with a distinct left and right side, a front and a back. Things like early worms.
Right.
And at this point in history, a terrifying new environmental pressure emerges: animal-on-animal parasitism.
This is a crucial turning point. Suddenly, the threat isn't just a tiny single-celled bacterium that a macrophage can easily swallow and digest.
Right.
The threat is another multicellular animal, a parasite, physically digging into your tissues.
Right. You can't just eat a parasite that's bigger than your immune cells. That's like a security guard trying to swallow a bear.
Ha! Huh. Yes, exactly. The old macrophage strategy just fails mechanically.
So the security department had to adapt to survive.
Yeah.
And this creates the first major evolutionary fork in the road for our blood cells.
Yes. And the researchers' transcription factor map showed that a highly specialized lineage split off from those ancient macrophages. This was the birth of the mast and killer cell lineage.
And how did these new cells fight if they couldn't eat the invaders?
Instead of trying to swallow the threat, this new lineage armed itself for chemical warfare.
Oh, wow.
They evolved the ability to manufacture and store granular proteases, specifically a type of enzyme called granzymes.
Granzyme.
Right, these are potent chemical weapons. When a parasite invaded, these new mast cells could swarm it and release these toxic granules into the surrounding tissue to destroy the larger invader from the outside.
So this split at the origin of bilateria fundamentally changes the entire architecture of the immune system.
Completely.
You now have two main branches: the ancient macrophages that fight by eating things, and the new mast cells that fight by spraying chemical weapons.
Yes, and that split set the stage for everything that followed in human evolution.
I have to admit, as I was reading through the paper, this next finding absolutely blew my mind.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
The researchers didn't stop at worms. They kept tracing these transcription factor lineages forward in time to see exactly where our modern, highly complex human blood cells came from. Let's talk about those branches. It turns out our T cells and our natural killer cells, the highly trained assassins of our immune system that hunt down viruses and cancer, they branched out directly from those ancient anti-parasite mast cells.
Which makes complete biological sense when you look at the mechanics.
Does it?
Yeah. T cells and natural killer cells in vertebrates share remarkably similar amino acid sequences in their functional proteins with those early mast cells. They inherited the exact same chemical weapon blueprints. They just refined how they target them.
Okay, that makes sense. But wait, hold on. This is the part I struggled with. The erythrocytes.
Ah, yeah.
Our red blood cells, the cells carrying oxygen to my brain right now. The researchers mapped them, and they found that red blood cells also branched from that ancient mast cell lineage.
Yep.
How on earth does a toxic chemical spitting killer cell become an oxygen courier? That sounds like turning a military tank into a mail delivery van.
It sounds totally bizarre at first, I know. But if you think about the biological mechanics of those two jobs, it actually makes brilliant evolutionary sense.
Okay, convince me.
Think about what a mast cell physically has to do. It has to manufacture massive amounts of a specific protein, those toxic granzymes.
Right.
It has to store them in huge internal sacs or granules without poisoning itself, and it has to circulate freely through the body to deploy them.
Okay, so it's basically a mobile storage container for chemicals.
Right. Now, what is a red blood cell?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's essentially a highly specialized mobile storage container. But instead of filling its internal sacs with toxic granzymes, evolution tweaked the blueprint. It swapped out the payload.
Right. The cell started filling those sacs with hemoglobin, a protein that binds to oxygen.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So the architectural mechanism, the ability to build a massive internal storage vesicle and carry a heavy protein payload through the bloodstream that was already perfected by the chemical weapon cells.
Yes, exactly.
Evolution just repurposed the cargo space for logistics. That is staggering.
It perfectly highlights how evolution works.
Right.
It rarely builds complex things from scratch. It modifies whatever machinery is already running.
Wow.
And meanwhile, to complete the map, the researchers found that our B cells, the cells that produce our antibodies, did not come from that mast cell branch. B cells evolved from the original macrophage branch.
So our B cells share a deeper, more ancient root with the wandering eaters. That paints such a clear picture. Our complex system isn't just a random soup of cells. It's a highly structured family tree that branched based on very specific survival pressures over a billion years.
We get the researchers realized something else. As these cells diversified and became more lethal, the physical environment they needed to develop in also had to evolve.
What do you mean?
Well, you can't just have highly trained assassin cells maturing randomly in the bloodstream. They need a controlled environment. So the researchers investigated the structural evolution of the immune system. specifically the origin of the thymus.
Right. The thymus is that vital organ situated right behind the sternum in humans. It's where T cells go to mature to learn what a healthy human cell looks like so they don't attack our own bodies.
Exactly.
It's basically the elite training academy for the immune system.
Yes. And the researchers tracked the genetic origins of this training academy to a very unexpected place. They looked at tunicates.
Tunicates?
Yeah. As we mentioned earlier, tunicates are sea squirts. They are early branching chordates, distant relatives of vertebrates. And they found the evolutionary origin of the thymus right in the tunicates' gills.
The gills. Why would you put your most elite immune training center in the gills?
Because biologically, it's the ultimate border security checkpoint.
Oh, I see.
Gills are the primary interface between the internal organism and the outside environment. Water is constantly flowing over them to bring in oxygen, which means they're also bringing in a constant heavy stream of bacteria and pathogens.
It is the main point of entry.
Exactly. You want your security forces stationed and training right where the invaders are actively trying to cross.
Okay, mechanically that makes perfect sense. But how do they prove that a sea squirt's gill is actually the evolutionary grandfather of the human thymus?
They proved it using those master blueprints again. They found that the edges of the tunicate gill slits express a specific transcription factor called FOXone 14, as well as molecules called Notch ligands.
Okay, what are Notch ligands and why are they a smoking gun here?
Think of Notch ligands like heavily armed bouncers at an exclusive club.
Oh, okay.
They physically interact with incoming stem cells, scanning their molecular IDs to decide which cells get to enter the pathway to become killer T cells.
Oh, wow.
And FOXone 14 and those Notch ligand bouncers are the exact same genetic signals used to run the developing human thymus today.
That's crazy.
The tunicate accumulates its cytotoxic killer cells right at the gill edges using the identical molecular instructions that our bodies use. It's definitive proof that a prototypic thymus formed at the gill edges of a distant ocean ancestor.
If we step back for a second, we have traced this unbelievable narrative. Single cells clump together, but the phosformin tells them to detach and become wandering macrophages. Then, giant parasites attack, forcing a split that creates chemical weapon mast cells. Those weapon cells eventually repurpose their cargo space to become our red blood cells, while branching into T cells. B cells branch from the eaters, and they build a border control training academy in the gills that eventually sinks into our chests to become our thymus.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the implications for human biology are profound. Because we aren't just talking about ancient history. This billion-year timeline isn't just in the past. It is actively playing out inside your body right now.
Wait, what do you mean? How is this happening right now?
The researchers examine modern hematopoiesis.
Okay.
This is the biological process of how blood cells develop and differentiate from stem cells in a growing human embryo, or even in your bone marrow today. And what they realized is that human stem cell development is essentially a reversed fossil record.
A reversed fossil record? That's a huge concept. Break that down for us. What's actually happening in my bone marrow?
Imagine a college student entering university, totally undeclared. They could be an engineer, a poet, or a doctor.
Sure.
As they take more classes, they lock into a specific major, dropping other options off the table. Your multipotent stem cells do the exact same thing. They start out with the potential to become any kind of blood cell, and as they mature, they slowly drop options until they lock into a specific identity.
Okay, I follow the college major analogy. Where does the fossil record come in?
The crazy part is the timeline. The stem cells don't drop all their potentials at the same time. The majors they keep on the table the absolute longest, deep into the differentiation process, are the potentials to become macrophages and mast cells.
Oh. And they hold on to the potential to become those two specific cells the longest because those are the two oldest evolutionary lineages.
Precisely. The macrophage and the mast cell are the biological foundation.
Yeah.
They inherited the oldest, most deeply embedded genetic toolkit. When a human stem cell is deciding what to become, it holds on to the instructions for the oldest evolutionary survival mechanisms until the very last possible moment. The sequence of how your cells make decisions today literally mirrors the sequence in which our ancestors acquired those cells over a billion years.
That is just incredible. The developmental pathway of a human embryo is reading an evolutionary history book backward.
Yeah.
But of course, as with any massive scientific deep dive into a billion years of history, there have to be blind spots. We always want to look at the limitations of the study. What parts of this evolutionary map are still blank?
This raises an important question about something called acquired immunity. The timeline of when our ancestors developed the ability to create highly specific targeted antibodies and receptors, which is what acquired immunity is still fuzzy.
Okay.
Acquired immunity relies on a complex biological mechanism called RAG-mediated gene rearrangement.
Oh, RAG-mediated gene rearrangement. That's a mouthful. What is our RAG actually doing?
Think of RAG as a genetic shuffleboard. It's an enzyme that purposefully scrambles specific segments of DNA to create billions of uniquely shaped receptors, allowing your body to recognize brand new threats it has never seen before.
That's a pretty advanced trick.
Highly advanced. And the current study, even with its massive scope, couldn't precisely pin down exactly when that RAG shuffleboard emerged relative to some of the other cellular branches.
So how do researchers plan to fill in those gaps? Where do they look next if sea squirts and sea urchins didn't give them the whole picture?
The next logical steps require analyzing entirely different branches of the animal kingdom, like deep-sea mollusks and lampreys.
Oh, right, lampreys!
Yeah, lampreys are ancient jawless fish, and they have a very unique alternative form of acquired immunity that doesn't use the exact same RAG shuffleboard. By mapping their transcription factors, researchers hope to triangulate exactly when and how highly specialized acquired immune systems came online.
That makes sense.
Additionally, there are likely other undiscovered transcription factors, other site foremen at play, that just weren't captured in this specific analysis. Science is always an ongoing process of refining the map.
So what does this all mean? Our complex immune and transport blood cells aren't just random modern inventions. They are a highly specialized expansion of an ancient single-celled toolkit governed by a foreman called FOSS.
Yes.
And incredibly, the timeline of how our ancestors fought off parasites and acquired these distinct cellular identities over a billion years is reciprocally mirrored in how stem cells differentiate inside your bone marrow right now.
It completely changes how we view the microscopic ecosystem that keeps us alive.
Yeah.
Every cell carries the active memory of an ancient microscopic world.
It really does. Which leaves us with this final thought. If our immune system's architecture is built on ancient single-celled survival behaviors, what does this mean for our understanding of modern immune disorders? Could looking at these ancient primitive traits offer us entirely new ways to reprogram cells and treat autoimmune diseases today?
It's a profound question, and one that will undoubtedly drive the next decade of genomic research.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Bodies learn to breathe and run. A single cell kept watch beneath one sun. A borrowed spark of false-lit ancient tomb that taught the dark to swallow danger whole. Same old signal, new disguise. Through open gates and changing skies. From quiet hunger to a shield. One simple script the world could wield. We'll be right back.
first time phagocytes to guardians in the mud. From ancient folk.